I'd like to call the meeting of the House Resources to order on March 12th, Tuesday at 3:08 PM. Today we have a full agenda and we'll get started with House Bill 131, Marine Parks. And then we'll go into the House Concurrent Resolution 8, House Joint Resolution 25, and House Joint Resolution 21. Then we will... My apologies. We'll begin with the teleconference for the two appointments, Richard Burley to the Board of Game and Glenn Allsworth to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. We'll have other confirmation hearings. Please refer to the schedule in your packet. We have on teleconference today Mr. Richard Burley and Mr. Glenn Allsworth. For the record, please note that today we are joined by Representative Hudson, Representative...
Moyer.
Moyer? I thought that was Boyer. My apologies, Representative Moyer. I almost said Boyer. Representative Boyer, Representative Lehman, Vice Chairman Lincoln, Representative Carney, Representative Ivan, and Chairman Davidson. So with that, we can go ahead and get started. We first would like to call on George Uteramal. Is George here? He's not here. Oh, George, there you are. Hello. Please come forward, George. Mr. Uteramal will provide us with an explanation of the state statutes governing the two boards we are concerned with today. That is the Board of Game and the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Richard Burley, do you read us? Can you hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I can.
Thank you. And Mr. Glenn Allsworth, can you hear us?
I can hear you just loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Allsworth, Mr. Burley, thank you very much. First, we'll hear from Mr. Uteramal, and he's going to go over the statutes for us governing the two boards of which you seek membership. So with that, if you would, please, George.
Thank you, Chairman Davidson, members of the committee. My name is George Uteramal. I'm Legislative Counsel for the Legislative Affairs Agency. Before you today, you are considering, you have the two persons appointed, one to the Board of Game and one to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. The Board of Game was created in 1975 as the successor to the Board of Fisheries. The Board of Game consists of seven members, is a regulatory board subject to confirmation under Article 3, Section 26 of the Alaska State Constitution. Members of the Board of Game serve a term unspecified under statute, but generally are they're appointed two periods, two terms of 3 years. Members of the Board of Game may be removed for cause as specified by statute or at the pleasure of the governor. Members of the Board of Game must be U.S. citizens as required by the Alaska Constitution. Statute further provides that members of the board shall also be Alaska residents. Members of the board shall be appointed on the basis of interest in public affairs, their good judgment, and their knowledge and ability in the affairs of the board. They also must be appointed with a view of providing diversity of interests and points of view on the board. Members shall be appointed to the board without regard to their political affiliation or regard to their residency in the state. Members of the board are entitled to compensation, amount of $150 per diem, are entitled to per diem of $150 per day, and travel expenses while engaged in the performance of duties of the board. While they are engaged in other activities authorized by the board, they are entitled to per diem of $100 per day and travel expenses. The board is required by statute to meet at least once a year. but however, that is frequently exceeded. Responsibilities of the Board of Game are to regulate the take of game in the state for sport and subsistence purposes. They do this through the establishment of seasons, areas, methods, means, bag limits, harvest levels, sex, and age restrictions. The board also regulate the management, conservation, use, disposal, propagation, and stocking of game in the state, as well as regulating the transport, possession, and release of native and exotic species of game in the state. Under the subsistence laws of the state, the board is responsible for identifying game populations traditionally and customarily used for subsistence purposes, and for adopting subsistence hunting regulations. The board may delegate its authority to the commissioner under statute. The board does not have administrative, budgeting, or fiscal powers. It is not at the head of the agency. At the head of the Department of Fish and Game is the commissioner. Though the commissioner does not serve on the board, but is the ex officio secretary of the board. The board also is required to submit names to the governor from which the commissioner of Fish and Game shall be appointed, and shall also has the power to, by resolution, to request the governor to remove the commissioner. In regard to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, that board was created in 1989 as a successor to the Guide Board. The board consists of 9 members, 2 guide outfitters, 2 persons licensed as transporters, one of which must be in the business of providing air transportation to big game hunters, 1 commercial permit holder, who is neither a guide outfitter nor a transporter licensed under the Act. 1 member of the board must represent the interests of native landholders. 2 members must be public members. And the 9th member of the Big Game Commercial Services Board must be a member of the Board of Game selected by the board itself. So that is selected by the Board of Game. Members of the Big Game Commercial Services Board serve for a term of 4 years, and they serve at the pleasure of the governor. A member who serves on the board for 2 complete terms, excuse me, all or part of 2 terms, may not be reappointed for a period of 4 years. The chair of the Big Game Commercial Services Board is appointed by the governor, and board members are entitled to per diem and travel expenses on the same basis as members of other boards and commissions. The duties of the Big Game Commercial Services Board are to prepare, administer, and grade examinations for guide outfitters, to authorize licenses for transporters, and authorize the issuance of permits to commercial use permittees. They're also responsible for establishing the qualifications for Class A assistant guide outfitters, assistant guide outfitters, and marine animal guide outfitters. The board also has responsibility for imposing disciplinary sanctions on persons licensed under the statute. Among the powers of the board is the power to establish a system for allocating access to big game hunting opportunities. This provision gives the board the power to establish by regulation a system of guiding areas to replace the exclusive guiding area system, which was found unconstitutional under the Osechek decision in 1988. Among the other power of the board is to establish provisions regulating the amount of supervision that a guide outfitter must provide over his employees, i.e. the Class A assistant guides and the assistant guides. Both the Board of Game and the Big Game Commercial Services Board are subject to the Conflict of Interest Law, AS 3950, and the Alaska Executive Branch Ethics Act under AS 3952. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Yutramol. Always appreciate your thoroughness, and thank you for your remarks. Are there, first we'll take up the confirmation of Mr. Richard Burley. Are there questions of Mr. Yutramol? No questions. Thank you very much. You have in your packets the resume of Mr. Burley. Are there questions by members of the committee of Mr. Burley? And Mr. Burley, can you still hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I can still hear you.
Okay. We have a question for you from Vice Chairman Lincoln. Vice Chairman Lincoln.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Dick. I have a couple questions. One is that I'm sure that you've given it a lot of thought, but just for the record, your predecessor says that she spent an average of 4 hours a day on board-related business and 60 to 70 days of travel away from home. I'm sure, like I said, that you have given that thought, but I would like to hear that you have that time commitment, or I don't know if it will require exactly that amount of time, but that time commitment to give on this board. And the second question that I have is, of course, you know, subsistence is a very hotly debated issue, and I would like to hear your comments on the position of subsistence in relationship to sitting on this board.
Excuse me. Mr. Burley, excuse me, I have made a tremendous error here, and I have asked for questions before I've given you the opportunity to make your statement. So with the indulgence of my vice chairman, I would like to correct that error and ask that if you have a statement or have comments, if you would please continue with your comments and then go to the question. Okay, Mr. Burley?
Mr. Chairman, I might be able to answer some of the questions at the same time I make my statement. Mr. Chairman, I lived in Alaska since 1957, and the majority of that time has been in the interior of Alaska. I presently work for a commercial printing company in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm the general manager. I have worked there since January 1 of 1960, with a time out when I flew commercially for Wien Airlines. My job with Wien Airlines was as a bush pilot, and I was employed by Wien for about 2.5 years. My principal job when working with Wien was a relief bush pilot, so I was able to see a majority of the interior in northern Alaska as I flew out of every base that they had. I had a long-time interest in hunting and fishing in Alaska, and I still do. I realize that it's a tremendous time commitment when Sam Castle made the statement that it took her about 4 hours a day. You should consider that she was chairman of the Board of Game, as well as chairman of the Joint Boards of Fishing Game, and a member of the Commercial Services Board also. I feel that I can spend enough time on this appointment to do the job, and I'm looking forward to doing it. I have no problem with my employer in taking time off to work on matters of the Board of Game, and for that I'm very thankful. That concludes my statement at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Burley. Representative Lincoln, if you would please, your questions.
Thank you. Dick, I think you heard my questions earlier, and you did answer the one on the time commitment, but going back to the issue of subsistence, I wonder if you could share a little bit of your thought on that.
Yes, I can. I'm Representative Lincoln. Subsistence, from my standpoint, is something that really needs to be addressed. It's an issue that I'm not sure anyone has a handle on exactly how to handle it. It looks like the Board of Game has done considerable work on establishing the customary and traditional use of the resources throughout Alaska at their special meeting in Fairbanks. I'm quite encouraged to see that the governor appointed a subsistence task force who he charged to come up with a solution that the Board of Game and the Board of Fish can work with that will help them start managing the resource. I look forward to finding out what their input is and having them then work with the legislative committee that's been appointed on subsistence to give us some direction on how we can best handle the subsistence requirements to the benefit of all Alaskans. That concludes that.
Ms. Verley, this is Chairman Davidson. I have a couple of questions for you. From your perspective, what do you see as some of the solutions or options available to the state of Alaska and Alaskans to resolve the subsistence issue?
One of the biggest options that we have will be to have the Attorney General review the opinion that was written by Judge Cutler to find out if in fact that every Alaskan is considered a subsistence user. Everyone on the Board of Game has problems with that interpretation of her law, or her, the interpretation that was made of her opinion. And the board has requested that the Attorney General's office review this. I think if we in fact are faced with that interpretation that all Alaskans are subsistence users, that it's going to place some severe restrictions on the use of the wildlife and fish of the state of Alaska. Based on that opinion, it will probably necessitate the boards to immediately establish Tier 2 hunting throughout Alaska, as well as Tier 2 on the fish. If we go to that on hunting, that means that there will not be any commercial harvesting of big game, which means no guiding industry. There will be no non-resident hunting, which means a severe cut in the Department of Fish and Game's budget because of the license and tag fees that come in, and then we in turn get federal matching money. I see real problems there. It might mean the fish board having to severely limit the fishing season, maybe even to the exclusion of having to stop non-resident open entry permit holders from coming up and commercially fishing. I hope that the Attorney General will review this decision, take a look at some of the ramifications that the boards are presently facing. That concludes my comment there.
So, Mr. Burley, then, do I understand that you do not concur in Judge Cutler's opinion?
I concur with Judge Cutler's opinion. I do not concur with the
Thank you, Mr. Burley. One other question. On February the 19th, you were quoted in the Fairbanks News Minor with the following statement. One of my primary concerns is that it seems that the legislature is trying to manage fish and game. Would you please expand on your statement, and exactly what did you mean by that, and what evidence do you give us that you see that the legislature is in fact trying to do that?
Thank you. What I meant by that statement, and I think it was probably taken a little out of context, is that one of the things that has created the problem that we're in was the federal legislation that required the state to adopt a rural preference for subsistence. When the legislature first adopted a subsistence preference, there was no rural preference put in that. Without that rural preference, I believe that it gave the Board of Game and the Board of Fish a way to manage the resource so that it in fact favored those people that were most dependent upon the resource. Then the legislature, under the federal threat of takeover, came and inserted the rural preference in there, which, of course, the court found as unconstitutional. One of the problems that I personally have is the federal government coming into the state of Alaska and trying to manage our fish and game resources, which are indigenous to the state. They do not do this in any other state, and I don't believe that we as Alaskans should allow them to come in and manage our fishing game. I would like to think that the legislature would support trying to face up to the federal government for them trying to mandate this to us. It eliminates what I consider resource management when we're having dual management of our resources.
Mr. Burley, you said face up to the federal government. It was your hope that the legislature would face up to the federal government. What did you mean by that?
The legislature would possibly support some kind of legal action against the federal government for breaching our rights under our Statehood Act.
Well, are there other questions by members of the committee? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Burley, you've been serving now for a number of years on the advisory committee up there, and you no doubt have some understanding of the scope or the magnitude of the problems confronted of this board, and you have seven members plus the new commissioner. Do you have an idea of where the major problem areas are, and any could you tell me where you think is going to be the what are the major problem areas confronting the Board of Game, and do you have any ideas on how you might attack some of these problems?
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Again, bear in mind that I've attended one joint board meeting and a few days of hearings in Fairbanks with the Game Board. Again, I'd like to reiterate that the biggest problem that the board is facing right now is the interpretation of Judge Cutler's decision. If we have to manage all of the fish and all of the game under the guideline that says all Alaskans are subsistence users. There simply isn't enough animals and fish to provide for the subsistence needs. If you want to take it to that kind of an extreme, that really is the biggest problem that we have facing us. Without a review of that opinion, I think we're going to see even worse problems than we've seen in the past. This is the biggest thing that I see immediately. Some of the other problems that we have is the budgetary cuts that have been proposed for the department, possibly hurting some of the field work that they do as far as game surveys, the things that the board needs to base legitimate harvest decisions on. I would like to think that the department won't suffer much more than what the governor has proposed. But if they in fact lose a lot of the income from non-resident hunting and fishing licenses and tag fees, I see a tremendous cut in the department budget, and that's going to severely impact the department's efficiency. Those are some of the big problems I see.
Thank you very much. As a matter of fact, my next question is, do you have enough time and staff to establish good input into the management of our game? And it sounds like you've answered that one for me, and I appreciate that depth of response. Thank you very much.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mine's not so much a question, unless Ms. Burley would care to respond to it, as much of a statement. But Dick, I agree with you on your comments regarding Judge Cutler's decision. This is how I felt way back in well, even more than a year ago, and I think yours is, from what I hear, a well-balanced approach to this issue of subsistence, in that I don't believe it ever was the intent that all users of the state would be, all people of the state would be classified as subsistence users. And Judge Cutler made that clear. But the difficulty came down is when the joint boards got legal opinions that suggested that, and that's when they got into their quandary and came out with their plan, or came out with their statement saying that we're in a fix. And because of that, it was the other board, Board of Fisheries, that then went on to develop a plan to enact that, and now has a subsistence plan for Cook Inlet that none of the users, user groups like. And so my comment is, are you aware, or do you have any reason to believe that there could be other legal advice out there that would bring us back perhaps more to what Judge Cutler was suggesting?
No, sir, I really don't have, except when the Attorney General's office and or / attorneys look at a case, it seems like every time one looks at it and reviews it, there's the potential for coming up with a different interpretation for it. And I think if we can come up with an interpretation that more follows the intent of Judge Cutler's decision and the intent of the law that the legislature passed, I think that we will have gone a long ways towards having something that we can work with. But right now, under that interpretation, it's murder on the resources. We really can't do any resource management. I was actually kind of appalled that everything the board has to do now is to try to keep themselves out of court. So their decisions are not necessarily made on game management, but they're made on how can we do this to keep ourselves out of court, to keep the state out of court. And I'm not sure that's a way to manage a resource as valuable as our fishing game. So I agree with you, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burley. Did you have a follow-up? Mr. Burley, another question from the chairman. How would you determine then who gets left in or who gets left out in the subsistence designation?
Mr. Chairman, how would I personally decide?
Yes, you indicated that you had trouble with the Cutler decision, and that such a determination would be a very hard or impact the resource in a very bad way. So my question then is, how would you make the determination as to who gets left in or who gets left out in the subsistence designation?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, let me restate once more that I did not state I had a trouble with Judge Cutler's decision. I have a problem with the interpretation of that decision. I don't personally feel that everyone that lives in rural areas is necessarily what I envision as a subsistence user. There are people who live in rural areas that live in a cash economy that are not going to starve to death, or are they 100% dependent upon the resources for survival. So I agree with her decision that rural is against the Alaska State Constitution. As far as giving a priority for the youth to certain users, the board has started working on some of the criteria, and hopefully it's something that the board can come up with, a criteria for subsistence users, that is something that is going to be equitable to those people throughout the state of Alaska that are dependent upon the resource, but not all of the residents, because I don't believe that that's the intent of the law.
Thank you, Mr. Burley. I share your disdain for the pursuit of legal action here, but you indicated that you felt that the legislature should, in fact, take on the federal government. And my question, I guess, is what, in your opinion, do you feel we could gain by taking on the federal government through legal action as regards ANILCA?
Mr. Chairman, I think that it would be worth a try. At this point, I don't see how we have anything to lose if we're going to manage the resources of the state of Alaska. I believe that we need to challenge ANILCA through the constitutionality clause, that they made us have a constitutional convention that before we became a state, we had to vote upon the Constitution, the people had to approve it in the state of Alaska. Then Congress approved it. They made a pact with us, which was an agreement that I would think they should be forced to live up to.
Are there additional members who have comments or questions for Mr. Burley? Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to try and ask some questions, and some of them are going to be comments. And I represent District 25, Yukon Kuskokwim Delta region. And the subsistence issue has always been the only issue that my people are concerned about everything else. And I'm going to try and describe through history and prior to the state, prior to Alaska becoming a territory, and prior to Alaska becoming a state, and try to explain the folk, how our folks feel out there, and I'll be asking questions as I go along. I hope you'll understand me. Most of it will be comments, basically. My constituents in that district have always believed that as village people, they should have the right to continue to hunt fish and game resources that they have done for years, and I'm sure you've heard this, and I'm sure it's been testified to this effect prior to Alaska becoming a territory and even after statehood. And I believe in some of the constituents I represent, I think time is like it's being still. Time is still standing still for those folks that believe and still continue to believe that they should be able to go after fish and game resources. And that's the mentality of some of the, even my age group and the older folks. Have you been in the YK Delta, Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta villages before?
Yes, sir, I have a couple of them.
And how can you represent or assist my constituents in their dream or their want to continue to be able to use the fish and game resources around them?
There's no guarantees that unless we get rid of that legislation that we're going to be able to manage the game resources for anyone. I agree with you that the people that live in what I consider the bush area have long been dependent upon the resource. And if you'll remember back when we were a territory, we were a young state. The Board of Fish and Game at that time, the combined board, used to set seasons and bag limits that tended to favor those people that lived in the rural areas. They set later seasons because people living out there didn't have freezers to keep meat in. It was necessary for them to take game after freeze-up so that they could keep the stuff. They did a lot. They opened winter seasons. Yet it was still necessary to manage the resource as far as the take goes. These are things that we need to look at. There cannot, in this day and age, be an unlimited take of the resource. But we need to manage it so that those people that are dependent on it have a reasonable opportunity to be able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Burley. Are there additional questions by members of the committee? Representative Hudson.
Thank you. I'll make this short. Just following on Representative Ivan's concerns there. In the hearings, Mr. Burley, we heard from a lot of elderly, particularly Native Alaskans who lived in urban Alaska, even in Anchorage and places like that. You believe that there ought to be some way within the subsistence provisions to provide them access to, say, wild game reserve, wild game resources, and would you favor maybe modifying it so that we can take care of those people that have that traditional lifestyle, even though they might be living in a rather affluent neighborhood?
In fact, that's one of the problems that I had with rural residents being put into the law. The fact that we see a lot of people that live in the urban areas that were excluded from this by the law. They weren't being provided for. This is what we need to do. We need to get out from underneath the law so that we can manage the resource for those people that are dependent upon it.
you've stated on your resume that you're a member of the Fairbanks Resource Association. Could you explain to us, please, what is the Fairbanks Resource Association?
I'm not sure what you're looking at. The Fairbanks Resource Association, I'm on their advisory board, and it's the predecessor of the Fairbanks Rehabilitation Association that works with people that have handicapped. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a vocational place for employment and job training for people with a handicap.
I see. Thank you. Mr. Burley, one final question from myself. What you've been involved with the Interior Sports Association for quite a number of years, and certainly it covers those times, I believe, during which Alaska was involved with the passage of Anilka. What was the discussion during that time with the association such as the one that you have been a member of for over 15 years, I believe, at the time that Anilka was being worked on in Congress? I mean, did your sports people feel that they were part of the agreement of the negotiations that created Anilka?
Was this the chairman, Mr. Davidson?
That's correct, Mr. Burley.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, that's the Interior Wildlife Association. And the primary goals of the Interior Wildlife Association when it was formed was to try to get the Department of Fish and Game to stop cow moose hunting in the interior because we saw a declining moose population. Additionally, we tried to get the department to undertake some predator control because we felt that without predator control, we could not get the herd of moose and caribou to rebuild. And we were successful on both of those counts. The cow moose season was eliminated. The department started some predator control, and there was a dramatic turnaround in the delta caribou herd plus the moose population in and around Fairbanks.
Thank you, Mr. Burley.
By doing it, they were able to once again open the season of the unit, the 20 caribou, and to start taking more moose in unit 20. Those are the primary things that we worked on.
I see. Thank you. So the Interior Wildlife Association had really no input. Thank you, Mr. Burley. So the Interior Wildlife Association had no input or had nothing to do really with Anilka, is that correct? And how about you at the time of the discussions in Congress and in the state of Alaska regards Anilka? Are you aware of any part that sportsmen such as yourself played in those negotiations, in the agreements that resulted in Anilka?
Not directly, Mr. Chairman. I, at that time, of course, belonged to the Tanana Valley Sportsman Association, the Interior Wildlife, and several other groups. And I, you know, I honestly can't tell you what input any of those particular groups had in Anilka. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Are there additional questions or comments? Representative Finkelstein, and by the way, before you get started, Representative Finkelstein, quite some time ago we were joined by Representative Zawacki and Representative Finkelstein. Representative Finkelstein, your question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the subjects that just came up was predator control, and I've long had strong feelings against the against aerial wolf hunting. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that subject.
wolf predation down. They had paid bounty hunters out. They did send people out of the field in the summertime to clean out the dens and kill the pups. They used poison. They paid a bounty. They did some aerial wolf hunting. And it was during that time, just before statehood, we saw the big game population increase. After we became a state, of course, there was no more paid bounty hunters, although the state did continue to pay a bounty for a while. And then in 1968, the federal government outlawed aerial wolf hunting. The state, except for predator control, a few years after that, issued selected permits for aerial wolf hunting. In the interior, it wasn't nearly as effective use of control as it was in some wide open areas like out on the west coast and up in the Arctic. After a few years of that, then the department quit issuing those selected permits, and when we finally got them to start the predator control work, they wound up using helicopters, and I'm not sure that that was cost effective, but it certainly eliminated some of the wolves, and it helped the moose population and the calf survival come from about, well, a moose in Unit 20, the calf survival was running like 2 per 100 calves that were born. And once they got to doing some aerial hunting again, this was the department, the calf survival rate went up to about 28, and the herd started rebounding. The caribou were in about the same shape. So while I'm not sure that it was cost effective, it was an excellent management tool to increase the game population. And, you know, there's still a few people around, I believe, that do some land and shoot wolf control, or wolf hunting, I should say. But there's, you know, there's opposition to that. Like, there's opposition to all kinds of hunting.
Yes. Just to try my question again, do you, aerial wolf hunting is something that's going on in recent years. The governor in his book, Who Owns America, comes out strongly against it. I'm just trying to ascertain your position on not the, but I do appreciate the historical perspective.
I believe that if that's a tool that the commissioner and the department thought was necessary to use, that I think as a board member, I would take an objective look at it and base my decision on what was presented to us.
Gosh, you should be in the legislature.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Burley. It was suggested that perhaps you should be in the legislature. That's what this. Are there additional questions? I'm sorry, Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was tempted to preface my remarks with my age and length of residency. But Dick, congratulations on your appointment as a fellow Fairbanks. I am acquainted with Dick, although he's not in my district. I have come to know him through dealing with him in his business that he manages commercial printing. And I've found him to be a very fair and reasonable person to deal with. And if he brings those traits to the boards, they'll be valuable assets. So as far as his views, we never really had to discuss them previously, so I'm learning, like the rest of you, on his specific fish and game or game views. You do have some big shoes to fill, Dick, and Samantha Castles. She was a constituent of mine, and I thought she did a very good job, and was frankly sad to see her go, especially as a female member of the board. But my question is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dick, but I've been given to understand that the joint boards were told by an assistant AG in a meeting last month, or maybe it was January, that they had reviewed the Kuttner decision, if we can go back to that for a moment. And they, including the AG during the Hickel administration here, that they had no new interpretation of Cutler's decision. I wonder if your expectation is that the board can somehow convince the AG otherwise, or is that a correct portrayal of the joint board's meeting today?
Thank you, Chairman. That comes in your stating that we did receive a letter from signed by the commissioner and Attorney General Cole. However, after our game board meeting in Fairbanks, the chairman of the game board, Doug Pope, wrote a letter to the governor's office requesting that they please reconsider and take another look at this, because it was felt by all of the members of the game board that without another look at this and having to go along with the interpretation of Judge Cutler's decision, that we were going to have to make some decisions that would be extremely difficult to make, and things that would severely impact the resource management. So you're right from the standpoint that we did receive that letter, but we all felt that we should try to encourage them to take another look at it. That letter, Representative Boyer, I received a copy of that just before I left home, and I would like to tell you that it was dated about the 8th or 9th of March, and Chairman Pope indicated that they would appreciate getting that because we were scheduled to start game board hearings in Anchorage on the 18th. So the status of it right now, I guess, is we're hoping for review of that.
Thank you, Dick, for the clarification. And lastly, this is kind of an inside joke, I suppose, but do you have any mottos for us this week?
No, sir, nothing, but I have plenty of mottos.
Thank you, Mr. Burley. I would like to announce to the committee that tomorrow we will have a letter with the designations of confirm, no recommendation, or do not confirm, and that letter will be available to committee members to sign tomorrow. With that, Mr. Burley, I would like to say thank you. We do have one person who would like to testify here in Juneau. Mr. Dick Bishop, if you would come forward, please give us your name for the record and who you represent. And before you begin, I would just like to turn the meeting over to Vice Chairman Lincoln. And after we finish with Mr. Bishop's remarks, then we will go on to Mr. Allsworth. Thank you, Mr. Bishop.
Please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Dick Bishop. I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Outdoor Council. The Outdoor Council does support Mr. Burley's appointment to the Board of Game. We believe that he will bring a great deal of expertise and a fair-minded, objective approach to the process of dealing with game regulations. That's really about all I could say, except that I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly thank Samantha Castle for the extensive, intensive, and good work that she did. We do think that Dick Burley will be an able replacement for her, and we'd like to encourage this committee to recommend his confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We don't have anyone else that is signed up to testify for the appointment of Richard Burley for the Board of Game, and next we'll go to the appointment for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Glenn Allsworth. Mr. Allsworth, are you on the line?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, loud and clear. If you would like to begin by making some opening comments, please feel free to do so.
Okay, I've been serving on, can you hear me okay, Madam Chairman?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. I've been serving on the Big Game Commercial Services Board since its formation. I've had a great time. It's been an educational experience, and it's been challenging working with them. I'm an Alaskan resident. I would imagine you have a copy of my resume in front of you. I was have never lived anywhere else but Alaska, and I believe the resume probably covers everything sufficiently for you, and I don't want to take any more of your time than necessary. I know you're all very busy, and I can entertain any questions that anyone there might have.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Allsworth. Does any member of the committee have any questions? Yes, Mr. Excuse me, Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mine's not so much a question on Glenn, but Glenn, congratulations on your appointment. I think you'll do an outstanding job. And my comment to the committee is I've known Glenn and known of him for a number of years, and I believe that he'd be an outstanding choice for this. Certainly knows Alaska, knows the issues that are before us, and I think that the governor has made a very wise choice. Glenn, I know there's some big issues in front of us you'll be tackling, but I expect that you'll be up to the task.
I appreciate your vote of confidence, Mr. Lehman. And any other questions from any of the other members?
Are there further questions? Yes, we do have a question from Representative Ivan.
Yes, Mr. Allsworth, is Representative Ivan Bethel area. Could you give us your definition of subsistence and what your positions are on it?
Representative Ivan, thank you. I appreciate your comments on subsistence. I, of course, my mother's family is from the Pilot Point area, and grew up in a time when subsistence was survival totally, and did a very lot of that in our years of growing up here at Lake Clark, where we had no telephones or no electricity. I refer to as the good old days. As far as subsistence and the definition, I'm encouraged by what the governor is doing now in getting a group of folks together that should represent everyone to come up with their ideas on subsistence. I guess my real question of subsistence is, it's my understanding, if you really need fish and game to keep from starving, that the law allows for it right now. And as chairman of the Subsistence Resource Commission for hunting in the Lake Clark National Park and Preserve, we recommended that the subsistence hunting season be open year-round, and and the reason being is everybody in the village knows that people in the village, they hunt whatever they wanted anyway, regardless of what the season says, but the fish and game biologists don't get very good information because nobody tells them. So with that background, we decided that season should be open year-round, because subsistence is not something you can set a season for and decide that people are only going to get hungry at one time a year. So we recommended that, and perhaps a way to control it, to come to a permit system so that the people managing the resource would be able to ensure that there was plenty of game and it was properly being managed. Right now, in this country, it seems like anybody that really needs it gets it anyway, but the state is not getting biological information and other information they need to really manage it.
Thank you very much, Representative Ivan. Any further questions? Representative Lehman.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to follow up on that. Glenn, are you suggesting or recommending that there be a reporting system in place, and do you think that it would be successful if those people that you're talking about that are hunting or fishing on a subsistence basis, perhaps year-round, will not fear reprisal?
I believe that's correct, Mr. Lehman. What has happened in the past, when the state research people came around around and asked everybody when they got their booth, everybody very wisely remembered when the legal season was and reported to the people that that's when they always get their booth because they didn't want to get in trouble. And so given that raw data, the state folks that worked on subsistence went back and said, well, these seasons are just fine because the people always take their moose during this subsistence season. And in reality, they took them whenever they wanted them, but they were smart enough to not give out that information for fear of getting in trouble. And our outlook at it from our commission's point of view was, if subsistence was to really provide for those needs of the people, that we should go ahead and go back to the idea that the game, if it's going to be used for subsistence, not have to be tied to a particular sports season, given other considerations, but that we need to be very responsible to those who are giving the responsibility to manage, for instance, our moose. If we're reporting to them accurately when the moose are taken and how many are being taken, they will be able to make better decisions in order to provide for sustained yield. And it's, I guess I'd liken it to farming. The people that are in charge of managing the farm, they don't know that we're out there stealing all the potatoes all summer. And so they make their decisions based on what should be instead of what is. And we're hopefully trying to get that eliminated so that if a person needs a moose, you can get a permit and go up and get your moose shared around with everybody in the village just like they're doing now, but at least the managers will get some biological information and some harvest information that's not available now so they can more effectively manage it.
Thank you, Mr. Allsworth. Now that we've got your testimony on tape, I'm sure that Fish and Game will come and visit Iliamna and get the record straight. Are there further questions? Representative Hudson.
Thank you. I was going to help you out, but I wasn't sure myself.
Don't do that.
Mr. Allsworth, thank you for your many years of labors in behalf of these resource issues in the state. And I'd like to ask you if this has relationship to the subsistence issue. We keep talking about sustained yield, and yet when you really think about it, one of the ways to avoid, say, conflicts of users is to increase the yield. And surely after all of these years in the field, you must know whether or not it's possible to increase the yield. And are there any simple solutions to increasing the game populations and things of this nature out there? You don't have to, if it's a long, deliberate answer, you don't have to answer it now, but if you have any of those ideas, I'm sure that a number of us would like to hear them.
Well, thank you, Representative Hudson, and I do have, I do agree with you that sustained yield necessarily must look for increase throughout. As the family gets larger, it's going to take more to feed us, and so I believe that we are not only responsible to sustain, but to sustain for future growth. And I see our problem right now is not a lack of game, of resource, but we don't have an animal problem so much as we have a people problem. And that the state, and I'm kind of meddling here, but the state, their only method of handling the number of animals will be to open the season for a limited number of days. Then they close it and go count what's left. And, there's not enough left. Next year they make the season shorter. And instead of limiting maybe the take on the game, they end up getting all of us user groups bumping elbows with each other. And, of course, we can all very quickly point our finger to our neighbor user group and say it's their fault that we're bumping into them, when if we could stretch the season out over a year-long period or even maybe a six-month period, the same number of animals could still be able to be harvested, but if that number were controlled, then we wouldn't be bumping into one another and creating all the emotional and cultural conflicts that sometimes arise when there appears to be a shortage of resource. And generally what it is a shortage of time to harvest that resource. Our caribou herd, for instance, here is grown to estimates between 70 and 80,000, which is very good considering when I was a youngster and just starting hunting, we had 12,000 in our herd. And I don't know exactly what all Fish and Game has done through the years, but it certainly has increased dramatically. And I just got back last weekend from a fine, good caribou hunt, very successful and excellent meat, and my thanks to those who have gone before to provide for that.
Thank you very much. Further questions? We appreciate very much, Mr. Allsworth, that you've made yourself available, as well as Mr. Burley, to take these tough questions from the committee. As our chairman, Representative Davidson, has stated that we will be voting on your confirmation, on both of your confirmations, I believe it is tomorrow, he said, that we'll have individual signatures on that. I appreciate again you both being there, and I believe we will go off line for, I don't know if the teleconference continues. Okay, the teleconference will go offline at this point. Thank you very much.
Okay, Madam Chairman and members of the Resources Committee, thank you very much, and I might get to see you in June or April. I should be down that way on behalf of the borough, so I'll try to lift you folks up and let you know how things are going. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you later.
Good evening. Oops, we don't need that. Next we have before us HB 131, and I believe Barnaby Dow is going to be making the presentation on behalf of Representative Ulmer.
Madam Vice Chairman, this bill has been up before this committee before and discussed at that time. The only thing we would add is that after discussions with Representative Hudson's office and other concerned parties, we are offering this letter of intent to join with the legislation as a means of trying to ensure that existing rights are protected and that future uses for groups that may want to be utilizing this area also be noted and protected as well. So with that, invite the committee's action.
Thank you. I think everyone has a copy of the letter of intent. Representative Hudson.
Teleconference. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that I presume we've already adopted the bill in the last meeting.
I don't believe that we did.
We don't have to do it because there's no amendments to it.
Right.
I would move that we adopt the letter of intent and move that we pass out House Bill 131 with individual recommendations and this letter of intent.
Representative Hudson, I've been noted that possibly that might be out of order. I'm not sure if it is, but to have a motion for adopting the letter of intent as well as the bill, I don't know why we can't have a motion to adopt HB 131 with the attached letter of intent. That seems like that would be in order, and I think that's
essentially what I'm interested in.
With the individual recommendations. Is there any objection to that, Representative Finkelstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have an item of discussion. I'm not going to object, but as far as I'm concerned, the letter of intent is totally necessary. This is what the law says. The law says it in almost these words. I feel like it's sort of embarrassing to the legislature when we submit letters of intent telling an agency to do what we already tell them to do in law. If there's pieces missing in law, maybe we should address that. But I'm real familiar with the Marine Parks legislation. I've worked on it for years, and I'm almost positive this is what the law says.
Perhaps, Mr. Dow, could you address that?
Well, yes, Madam Chairman. I believe that Mr. Finkelstein has a point in that The law does expressly permit the activities that are noted in the letter of intent. The purpose behind offering this is to reaffirm that.
Representative Zawacki, did you have a question?
No, I just found my letter of intent.
Beth?
Representative Lena?
Barnaby, I think you may have been here the last time when I raised some questions, and since then I've been nearly satisfied with the answer that had to do with, is there any land out there that could be privately used, not in conflict with the Marine Park, the concept of Marine Park, not violating any of these things, and the information I've received is that all or nearly all of that available land has indeed been placed in private ownership. And I guess for the record, just like to confirm if that's indeed your feeling, and on behalf of the sponsor, if that's correct information.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As we understand it, land disposals in the Juneau area have included numerous disposals for private land, and that many of the choice locations in this area, especially on Shelter Island, where much of the private land has been sought, there have been numerous disposals. So, in essence, yes, that is, we understand that to be the situation.
Further questions? Representative Finkelstein.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just proposed, I'm not sure who's behind the letter of intent, but I did find the existing law in our packets, and virtually the same words are in the existing law. And it just seems to me it doesn't serve any purpose to have a letter of intent telling them to follow existing law when it's already existing law. I think it's sort of embarrassing to us, and I'd encourage us, I'm not going to make a big issue, but I just encourage us not passing the letter of intent, unless someone can. I'd be glad to read the sentence to everyone, but they're virtually identical to the sentences that are in here.
I don't think it's necessary to have it read. It is in the packet. Yes, Representative Hudson.
My reason for inquiring on this is because some of my constituents inquired of me. When we propose a bill, and just read the bill, for the layman out there and the citizen who is looking at our actions, the questions can certainly not necessarily be too damned evident. And while we might be lawyers and we might immediately go to the law books, a letter of intent of this nature doesn't become law, it's already in the law. It's simply a statement that satisfies, I think, some citizens, some private constituents as this legislation moves forward. And I see it not as harmful, not as embarrassing to me, and as a clear definition to those people that have inquired of me whether or not they would be able to hang saltwater rearing pins in these waters if we pass this bill. And it's not in the law that specifies that. By putting it into a letter of intent, it clears that up. And I like to see the letter of intent, and that the lawyers be lawyers.
Further questions? Representative Finkelstein.
Yeah, Chairman, I'm not a lawyer either, so I don't suffer under that burden. And as I said, I'm not going to object to the letter of intent because if the local representatives want it, that's fine with me. But I do think if you're going to offer confidence to someone who's concerned with the bill, the best way to do it is to show them the law, because if people start to believe the letter of intent means something, then we've really got a problem. Their strength of their protection in law is the fact that it's in law, not in a letter of intent. And these letters of intent mean nothing and provide no real advantage to someone who's might be regulated out of existence. I would drop it there. I don't mean to belabor the point.
We do have another person that would like to testify, if you would stand by. Mr. Phil Hollingsworth. Holdsworth, I think I mispronounced your name. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Holdsworth. I didn't intend to speak, but after listening to the testimony, I thought I'd like to make a comment. Having been involved in these establishment of these marine parks from the very beginning and up to date, I thought you'd be interested in knowing that these lands, of course, are at the present in the Tongass National Forest, and that the agreement has been made to make a transfer to the state. And all the other marine parks all throughout Southeast, the statute which allowed the Tongass Forest to release lands for these marine parks specifically said that those lands, there was a certain amount of acreage allowed to be selected, those lands were for community recreation only. They made it very specific. Now this is one case where this is purely a community recreation area. It's in within this community here. And it's a service that is properly so created. And some of the other areas scattered away from the communities, which they finally did talk the Forest Service out of, that were created, did create closed-off access to mineral entries, minerals in behind these areas. And we had to use a letter of intent to explain that these, if this was the only outlet from a mineral deposit into that particular area, that the Commissioner of Natural Resources had the right to allow them to build a mountain facility and so on to get things in and out. But this is purely a community recreation area. And so that's, I think, one reason why the emphasis, I think, is not to dispose of any more lands in these defined areas. That those islands are all very small, and they have to agree that on Shelter Island, which is quite a little land that's met the requirements of the people so far. I understand people would always like to get a cabin somewhere on an island, but I just thought I'd explain that, the difference between that and the other.
Thank you very much for the testimony. Your TITAC also makes me very homesick for the interior. We do have a motion that was made on moving HB 131 out of committee with the letter of intent attached. Hearing no objection, with individual signatures. Hearing no objection, that is ordered. We are now to, I think it's the HCR 9. And let's see. Tom Ackerley is going to speak on behalf of Representative Navarre. Oh, at the same time? I understand that HCR and both 8 and 25 we're going to be dealing with at the same time. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Tom Ackerley. I'm sitting in for Representative Navarre, who's in Soldotna attending the funeral of David Doffitt. I think the sponsor statement pretty well sums up the items that Mike is concerned about in relation to the Exxon Valdez spill data. Talking to him this afternoon, he wanted to reiterate or make sure that somewhere along the line that the Attorney General's office justify the data, you know, why data should be locked up or sealed or whatever, and he has not heard the justification that he's liked up to this point. He's concerned about the economic data, but the scientific data is most valuable. And the justification, there are seven of them listed down here why he thinks it's so important. Finally, I guess the expeditious movement of this resolution is extremely important. We need to do something prior to the settlement, and he also believes that the message should be loud and clear. Probably one other addition to HJR 25, we probably should add U.S. District Judge Stanley Sporkin, who is another player in this litigation and this thing is ongoing. Basically, I just, you know, let these, you know, the sponsor statement speak for itself. If you have any questions, I'll attempt to answer them.
I was going to hit that. Yes, Representative Freeman.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ackerley, I don't see in here a release date. Is the, does Representative Barr suggest that it be at the time considered appropriate by the litigants? For example, if there's a settlement in State of Alaska and Exxon, at that time, then appropriate data would be made available to the public, and, but not necessarily before that time.
Correct. Well, we really haven't discussed it, but I think that would be acceptable to Representative Navarro.
Madam Chair, I just want, my comment is that there probably is certain information that should be confidential until the appropriate time, and I think, it, in my opinion, it would be inappropriate for us to suggest otherwise. And some of that information may not need to necessarily need to be confidential, but that it should be, probably should be until that time. Then the suggestion here is, and I agree with it, that it should be made public, and there's no legitimate public purpose served by keeping confidential.
Representative Hudson?
I don't know if there is a legitimate reason to not release this information. I can respond only from the testimony given to us by the Attorney General Cole, and that was that as long as the state is being sued by private litigants, that the state would do public harm by releasing information that might in turn be turned right around and used against the state. And that was his argument. I don't know if that's a legitimate argument or not, but that is something that needs to be carefully considered, because on one hand, and I think in his statement he made the comment that that they have no problem in releasing the scientific data, and they intend to do that at some point in time as a baseline, and indeed even to those people who would assign or agree not to use the data against the state of Alaska in trying to gain some multi-million dollar settlement against the state of Alaska. So you're running into a situation of this kind of an issue and this philosophy here as to whether or not the state should, on one hand, withhold it from private litigants who could, say, sue Exxon, and at the same time release it to those private litigants who in turn could garner millions of dollars from the public coffers as a result of, perhaps, as a result of their litigation against the state. And I just throw that out because it is a little deeper, I think, and not being an attorney, than what it appears from the surface. From the surface, it appears, well, why not, you know? But in context, it sounded at any rate as though there was some potential justification. And I just put that out to the committee for amplification of the issue.
Representative Hudson, I should have mentioned to the committee that after Mr. Ackerley's testimony, we are going to be hearing from the Attorney General's office. Yes. Are there further questions? Representative Zawacki.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
No, we're not.
I guess maybe a question I would have, and it's unfortunate Representative Navarro isn't here. I know both these resolutions say Exxon Valdez litigation, but I guess I'm somewhat surprised that this hasn't been brought up before in the past years, because the previous administration indeed did have litigations that were going on with several of the oil industries on tax settlements out there, and yet not one person in the legislative body ever came forward and demanded that be made public. Because in both resolutions, in fact on 10 and 11, you said, whereas as a matter of public policy, materials produced and litigation should be a matter of public record. I guess my question is, why suddenly, because we've got a governor who's finally doing his job with an attorney general to settle something that should have been settled a long time ago, we're suddenly jumping and are so overly concerned when the previous administration has settled many of them with nobody questioning those decisions? And I think Representative Hudson does bring up something. What if those records were made public in the previous litigation settlements and you had somebody out there who wasn't satisfied as to the government's final settlement? Could they not have been sued in a sense?
I'm afraid I can't answer that. I just don't have the background. I don't know.
Representative Finkelstein.
Mr. Chairman, just so there's some response to the record, on the second part of it, the logic for not including it and not making available that information, you've got two participants in it. The state's one side, the state has that information available to them. The private party or whoever it might be who do the follow-up doesn't have that information available to them. I can hardly see how that's fair. It seems in the case, if you're concerned about fairness, you'd want to make sure that there is equal treatment of all parties. There's good and bad in all those economic and biological studies. Some cases, you're going to find out the species is totally unharmed. Other cases, you're going to find out there's severe harm. Both sides will use the information in court to their own advantage, and you're going to have some fair resolution. I don't see there's any particular problem to that.
Additional questions or comments? Representative Hudson.
Well, just for the record, just maybe to respond to Representative Zawacki, I do recollect in the past where the legislature has taken the administration to task for settling, although I don't ever remember seeing it in the form of resolution to this neighbor, extent before Jim, but clearly the legislature has chastised. I can remember back even when Jay Hammond was here, where legislature was deeply questioning whether or not he had the state's best interest in mind in settling the way he did. So I think this is kind of an ongoing standing thing, but this is the first time that I've seen it in the form of resolution. Just for the record.
No additional questions. Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to hear from the Attorney General's Office, Deputy Attorney General Doug Blankenship. I understand that you would like to speak on both HCR 8 and HCR 25. If you would, please identify yourself for the record, and we are not on teleconference.
My name is Doug Blankenship, and I'm the Deputy Attorney General. I was asked, at least a representative of the department was asked to appear today. Pursuant to a March 11 letter from Representative Navarre, basically asking us to respond to any questions that the committee may have concerning the administration's position on the release of the economic and scientific data. First of all, I'd like to comment that I do not believe that it is a problem for the release of the scientific data as far as establishing a baseline, as Representative Hudson had stated. As far as releasing the data to parties who have potential claims against the state, I've spoken with the Attorney General concerning that, and he's asked me to relay that his position on that is that it's basically a tactical decision on the part on his part in dealing with these potential claims. He advised me that he is speaking with the plaintiff's lawyers, I'll call it potential plaintiff's lawyers, concerning tolling the statute the statute of limitations for a limited period of time. I believe the statute runs out later on this month as far as their ability to bring the any possible suit against the state. I don't know if he started those discussions as yet. or if he has what the contents are, but I know that he did advise me that he is going to commence those discussions. He also indicated that if a decision is made to release that data, that there has to be careful consideration of what is released and when it is released, and he indicated that it will probably be something akin to a document-by-document review to see what is released. And his major concern is, as was pointed out, as far as the use of these documents in a suit against the state.
Does that conclude your remarks, Mr. Blankenship?
Yes, sir.
Did you wish to continue on with those are your remarks for both resolutions?
Well, the only one that I have is House Concurrent Resolution Number 8. I haven't had a chance to look at the 25. Yes.
They're both exactly the same.